Hey, it's Freddie Snakeskin from K-Rock, Rock of the 80s. And you're listening to Holly and Dave on the What Difference Does It Make podcast.
Well, hello there.
Hey, Dave.
What's going on, Holly?
How are you?
I'm good. Doing well.
Good. Good. So.
So what?
So here we are again.
So what? This is the big episode.
This is a big episode. This is a huge episode. And I'm trying to conjure up even more excitement by changing it up by sitting not to your left, but across from you.
Do you watch Curb Your Enthusiasm?
I have not watched this season yet of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh, okay. There's a whole thing about side-sitting.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, it's serious business.
Yeah.
Like that's...
Are you a side-sitter?
No, like...
I assume you mean like with your partner.
If you're at a two-top table, would you sit across? Or what would that connotate if you sat directly to my left at a table?
Why would I do that?
What would you think, though?
That I didn't want to look at you.
Oh, okay. No, it's kind of like, a little intimacy there.
Oh.
I saw you were side-sitting. What's going on? What's between you two?
That's so interesting. Okay. No, I'm going to watch the episode, but I think it's intimate when you're sitting across and you can actually look into somebody's eyes. Don't you think that's more intimate?
It is. What about, have you ever, you're at a booth and you sit on the same side?
Never.
I know, right? That's horrible.
Yeah.
But I've seen people do that, like on a date or something. Or,
like young couples who just need to be touching each other all the time?
Oh yeah, it's usually youngins.
I think I've seen old people doing it too. But no, I need to see whoever it is I'm with.
It's just weird. Yeah, I don't know.
And when we used to go out with my dad, me and my mom and dad, and probably my brother, though I don't have any recollection. I just remember him always wanting to sit across from my mom and I both. So I would have to side sit with my mom so my dad could see us both.
How about that? All right.
I don't know. To each his own. I'm not going to sit shame anybody.
You're not going to
seat shame.
You just made up a term. Sit shame.
I'm not going to sit shame you for sitting next to Janice as opposed to across from her.
Good luck with that. Sit shame.
Sit shame.
All right, let's move on from there. What are we doing today?
We're at number 10.
Let's do it like Paul Stanley.
We're at number 10 on the 1983 K-Rock Rock of the 80s countdown.
All right, this is the episode. We're finally we're going to reach number one. We've been counting down for the past 11 weeks, right?
Yes.
11 weeks, that's almost 3 months of nonstop
1983. Wow, so we're going to move on. We're going to move on after this to...
Well, the plan is we have some interviews lined up. Yes. We'll be playing that. And then before we get into 1984, we've got a lot of special episodes in store.
So stay tuned. It's a whole lot of fun.
As we have been doing, if this is your first episode, Holly, please explain what we are doing.
So K-Rock compiled a list from every year of the 80s and maybe further of their 106.7 songs of the year. 106.7 because that was their frequency.
They do this every year.
They do this every year. So 106.7 songs. So we have been counting those down in 10 song chunks. More recently, they have pared down their 106.7 list to top 80. So it's been fun for me to guess which songs have fallen off the list. And some actually were added to the 80s. Enough were removed from the 106.7 so that a few new fun ones were added that were not on the original list. So
there you go.
Is that a concise explanation?
Sure. and I can tell you we can end our game this week because all these songs are in the same place.
Oh.
10 is 10, 9 is 9, 8 is 8, up is up, down is down. It's these are stone cold classics.
Yeah. Okay. So this is just my own personal, because this is our very own show, our very own podcast. I have feelings about this. I know that these songs, I'm not 100% certain, these songs that made it to the very top of the chart, it was a mishmash. There's no science to it as like the Billboard.
Science! Which should have been the top 10. We have a lot of songs that were in higher up that we thought could have been the top 10.
Yeah, and some of these are not. If you've been listening, you know how much I love 1983.
Mm-hmm.
And these songs, one more fun than the next, but the top 10 were not necessarily my favorite songs from 1983.
They're not supposed to be your favorites. They're all of Los Angeles's favorites.
And this is my favorite.
I know. Well, you did you vote in the election?
Yes, sometimes, and I think my candidate should win.
Sometimes your candidate does not win.
But she didn't.
Oh, she. Okay. Well, I won't. I wonder who it was. Okay. So, yeah. So this was, you were confessing a little bit as to who you were voting for.
And confessing that these are not all necessarily my favorite songs. However, this song, I Confess That I Confess, is among my favorite songs.
As it should
be. From 1983. Yeah. English
That's
number beat. 10.
This is the English beat. Number 10.
Yeah.
Number 10. We need, I should get those singers. Yeah. Number 10.
Or what difference does it make?
Yeah, I know. We should get the what difference does it make singers, which is clearly not us.
Dudes, come over here. Yeah. Let's do this.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Okay, so it is English Beat, I Confess, and you love this song.
I do. Do you?
Yes, I do love this song. Lyrically and instrumentally, it's got a trumpet solo for God's sake.
But does it have marimba?
No, but it's got a nice piano in there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's great. There's a lot going on in this song.
Yeah, a lot of confessing, and the confessing, which
it's an argument. It's like two people like going back and forth, or you know, this guy is. It's not going well.
Well, I was reading an interview with Dave Wakeling because I couldn't quite figure out that's what I thought this song was about, the back and forth. But he said in order to make this song appear more confessional and more personal, I would mess with which person it was written, whether it was me or he or she. So he says that I Confess was only partly autobiographical. Some of the stories were his own. Some of the stories that were stories he heard from people on a train, you know, by eavesdropping.
Okay. So like all good songwriters or authors, they take part of the personal and some conversation they've heard while they're out in the world.
Yeah.
They kind of melded into their own little personal story.
But I think when we hear a song like I Confess, we think it's got to be autobiographical, right? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, a little bit. There's always a little bit of truth in every story.
Yeah.
But yeah, some great lines. I mean, I always like my favorite has always been, I know I'm shouting. I like to shout.
Yes.
You're getting loud. Okay. Shh, calm down. I know, but I liked, you know, that's fine. You know, you get to that point like that. I think that kind of.
We all feel that.
Right.
We all do feel that. Yeah.
All right. It's cards on the table time.
Yeah.
Just show me.
Cards.
It's cards on the table.
Yeah. Cards on the table time.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's ruined three lives. I don't know what. I mean, it's like, I guess it was, you know, probably an affair between two people, mm-hmm. and someone else got involved, and you know, he got involved, and like, all right, well, I guess my life is not as good as I thought it was going to be by dating this person, or you know, interfering in this relationship.
Yeah, but it wasn't about one affair. He said, I noticed in my own life and in the young friends' love affairs that were going on. I noticed a lot of things that started to go wrong with them, which is, this is different, I guess, before this song, most of their material was more political and this was more,
a little more personal.
Yeah.
And it worked because was this their, no, this wasn't their
save
biggest
it,
hit.
Save It For Later was bigger. Forget about it. Save It For Later, I think, was bigger.
Okay.
I think this only went to 54 in the UK.
Okay.
It did not chart here, but Save It For Later.
Just in my mind, this is probably one of my favorite. My favorite English beat. Well, no, I'm sorry. Mirror in the Bathroom is always going to be my favorite.
Yeah. Oh, Mirror in the Bathroom. Oh, they were great. I love
them. Sure.
They also, yeah.
And you know, Rankin Roger passed away last year. But the English, God, he was only 56, and brain tumor, lung cancer, not a good way. Only 56. Horrible.
Okay, that's a tragedy.
Yeah.
I remember seeing, do you remember what their swag looked like their shirts and their logo? It had their logo and then the ska stuff, you know, the black and white.
Very cool.
I remember in high school, before I really heard them, so I graduated from high school in 1983, I had a boyfriend in high school who was the one who turned me on to them. And I remember he used to wear English Beat t-shirt.
Yeah.
And that's always what I see when I think of them.
That's I know a few. I always was jealous of. There were some people. They always. It was the cut sleeveless tee.
Yep. Yeah.
Sleeveless tee.
Yeah.
English Beat.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God! It's a look so good. And I was never able to carry that off.
Yeah. But. Oh, you just got to wear it with confidence.
I know. But I, you know, don't really have that at that
high school, I know.
At that age.
No one was going to shirt shame you.
I don't know. There might have been some shirt shaming. But the English Beat, they go on. And we will be talking about in further episodes, but the English Beat morphed into general public.
Yeah.
So we'll be talking more. So, okay, number 10, English Beat, I confess. We move on to number 9, this band, Duran Duran.
Hey, I like the way you say that.
That's
you,
the way Richard you, Blade used to always say it. Yeah. Duran Duran. He was disc jockey on KROQ.
So this is Duran Duran, Union of the Snake from Seven and the Ragged Tiger.
Yes.
Do you like the song?
I do. I mean, yeah. I liked, I mean, there were these first three albums were just phenomenal. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite Duran Duran song?
Probably Rio or Hungry Like the Wolf or something like that. I think probably Rio. Just hearing Rio just every time. It just sounds so great. What's your favorite? Where do you
go? That's a good one. Oh, where do I go?
Yeah.
I don't think you could ever guess which one.
Wild Boys.
No.
You're not going to say White Lines, horrible
no.
cover.
No, but I do like that. I think that's a fun one.
That's a horrible mistake of yours. That's
I don't know. So. No, I like The Chauffeur.
This was not on Seven and the Ragged Tiger?
No, it was on, I think it was on Rio.
Okay.
Yeah, it was on Rio.
This was their first and only number one album on the UK album charts. And it was the last studio album for the band's most famous lineup until 2004's Astronaut.
Mm-hmm.
So this was the tie. This was peak form of the band. Oh, yeah, I know that one. Okay.
Okay. In one note? Yeah. You name that tune? Okay. I don't know what it is. I just
like it goes something like Silver or Hi-Ho Silver or what
was it? Yeah, pretty good.
I can't remember. I mean, just hearing that, I remember.
As the sun drips down, bedding heavy behind, the front of your dress all shadowy lined, and the droning engine throbs in line with your beating heart. That's it. Okay, that's not the song we're talking about, though.
No,
so, sorry, let's get back to Union of the Snake. Sorry.
That's all right.
I went off on my favorite.
Do you know, Roger Taylor, the drummer, he based his drum beat for this song on Bowie's Let's Dance.
Did you really? Know that? No, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Let's
dance. Dark, 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 dark. Mm. The union of the snake.
That's funny.
Yeah, I think it's kind of the same.
Yeah,
the beat and drum track were based on Bowie's Let's Dance song.
It's funny because he says that the lyrics were inspired by Jim Morrison.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. He said, Simon Le Bon said, there are times when I get into books and things and some of that comes up on the record or I'll get into a certain artist. An obvious example of that is Union of the Snake and Hungry Like the Wolf, and they're very much related to Jim Morrison and his lyrical ideas.
Okay.
So you got a combination of Jim Morrison and David Bowie.
Nice.
Yeah. Hey, so when they got back together in 2002, well, John Taylor called it the Reunion of the Snake.
Clever. So do you know who the Seven are?
No. Who are they?
Well, Simon says it's an adventure story about a little commando team. The Seven is for us, the five band members and the two managers. And the Ragged Tiger is success. Seven people running after success. It's ambition. That's what it's about.
That's very interesting. Where did you read that?
I read it on the internet.
On the interwebs?
Yes.
Okay.
This was Princess Diana's favorite band.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that if you know nothing else about them, that's what we should know.
You can't be surprised by that.
No. No, but I bet not Prince Charles.
Five pretty guys. The Record Mirror did not like this album, by the way. They called it... You don't read reviews like this anymore.
What?
They called it pathetic, useless, no good, pretentious, pompous, and possibly the first chapter in their decline.
Holy that's a
right?
Scathing.
Yeah.
And mean. I think that's really mean.
Well, that was, you could do that back then.
You would do, people do that now on Twitter. That's why
well,
I that's wouldn't.
True. Well, but yeah, but not legitimate press.
No.
I don't know. Yeah. No one like Rolling Stone would never, or anyone who does just all out, this is crap. Why don't even bother listening to this?
Oh, it's painful. It's painful when you read a review like that and like a movie review too. I just think. Oh, it's just got to be so hurtful for the filmmaker, for the artist.
Did you see Cats?
No.
It deserved it.
But somebody put their heart and soul into it. You know, I would prefer to say it's not for me. It wasn't my, you know, it's not my cup of tea.
I understand. Something like Cats was a major disappointment. I think maybe for this guy, maybe for Record Mirror, he was a fan of Rio. And he listened to this going, no, I don't think so. Or maybe he was like, oh, these five pretty guys who make great music, I'm going to, this album is not.
He's just jealous.
He just went maybe over the jealous. Top. I'm sure upon further reflection, he might say something differently. And I'm sure it was a guy.
Yeah. Yes, I'm sure. Hopefully they didn't take it too personally.
I think Duran Duran are going to survive longer than whoever wrote this review.
Yeah, I'd like to know who that is.
Look up the record mirror. Yeah. Okay, let's move on to number 8. We have Peter Schilling.
We have another parenthetical song.
Coming Home, in parentheses.
Okay.
So, and another German song, by the way.
Yes.
A lot of German. We got your Falco, we got your Nena. Did I say that right?
I think you did.
All right, and now we have Peter Schilling.
Yeah.
Who all had German hits, and they translated it to English, and... voila.
Okay, wait. You called it Coming...
Say, a friend, how do you say there it is in German?
I don't know. But the song, you didn't say that. So Coming Home is in the parentheses, but it's Major Tom. For those that might not know.
Yeah.
Although I read too, it is Coming Home. Because I saw in one source, I saw in parentheses, I'm coming home. It's just coming home, right?
I think so. That's what I put.
I think so. No, so I think so
whatever
too.
Whatever I wrote is correct.
Oh, of course it is. Of course it is.
It was recorded in German. And then reached number one in West Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. And then, I don't know, someone came up with a good idea, like, hey, this is kind of a catchy song. I don't even know if he spoke. Maybe he did speak English. But he recorded it, and lo and behold, it reached number one in Canada, 4 in South Africa, and peaked at number 14 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 Singles Chart.
It's pretty good.
That's damn good.
Yeah.
And it reached number 2 on the dance charts. As we've talked about in the past, how important the dance charts were.
Are you going to add this to your dance, dance playlist?
Only reached number 2. Doesn't qualify.
Really? You can't put any charting songs on your dance? It's your chart. You can do it. I mean, it's your playlist. You can do whatever you want.
That is true. But, you know, it will. It is on our Spotify playlist, which you find on the WDDIMpodcast.com website. By the way, that is as long as we're in the middle of that, you know, you want to review all 106.7 songs, they will now be up and you could listen to all 106.7 songs on the website.
I recommend you do.
Yeah, it's a fun exercise to go down that whole list, which and not talk about each song in depth, which we have done.
Have an 80s party and play our playlist.
Have an 83 party.
Yes, an 83 party, exactly.
Yeah.
Get your leg warmers on and your...
Indeed.
Members only jackets.
I don't know of another time where Germany had such an impact on the U.S. charts.
Where Germany kicked some ass.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you always hear about the U.K. or, you know, there were bands from Australia. There were even Canadians that took over.
But, yeah, I've heard about that.
Yeah. But not too many Germans currently. Hmm. I don't know. Do you
I
know
think
if
we
a
need
major?
To be checked.
Yeah. I'm sure we will be checked. And
yeah.
You know. Let us know. What's name a couple of big German artists or that had a hit originally in German and then it came to the U.S. Or any language for that matter that was suddenly translated into English and became a hit. Offhand, I can't think of anything.
No, I can't either.
All right.
But I am.
I'm sure there's a podcast where they talk about that.
I'm going to put my thinking cap on and I'm going to search Apple Podcasts.
Yeah.
Or Spotify.
This song, great song, like it?
Yes, of
it's kind
course
of a, it's kind of a homage to Space Oddity.
Isn't that funny? I wondered at the time when this was released, I wondered like what the relationship was, what, you know, was it just another take on it, you know, on him?
I think so.
This called it a follow-up. What I read, it called it a sequel to Space Oddity.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. No, nothing wrong with it at all.
I like that. You take, you know, like Star Wars. You take something successful, and then you build on that. Lo and behold, you have a franchise.
and behold.
Anyway, this worked for Peter Schilling, and it was number 8 back in 1983.
Yeah, no, it's a good one. I became a little pensive about it in the relationship to David Bowie's Major Tom.
Oh, you shouldn't at all. You should just enjoy the song for what it is.
Yeah.
Good jam.
I'm gonna out myself on something. I seem to be outing myself every week, like I did with Neil Diamond, how I didn't know Neil Diamond wrote Red, Red Wine.
Okay.
And as it turns out, I had one of our listeners email me to say that he didn't know it either, so I felt a little validated.
Wow.
So
very good. Well, okay, you are validated.
So, Ashes to Ashes,
right,
is a sequel to Space Oddity. Did you?
Yeah, I mean, he's Ashes to Ashes. Was it? I don't even know the funky. I don't even know what we know. Major Tom's a junkie.
Yeah. Okay. So in
I mean, he used that character's name, but
they say he released this as a sequel to Space Oddity. Ashes to Ashes, where Major Tom reestablishes communication with Earth. I don't pay attention to lyrics.
Right.
Which is stupid, but, you know, it's about a good beat and if you can dance to it. So I didn't realize that. And I know that he mentions Major Tom in Ashes to Ashes, but I never thought of it as related to Space Oddity.
Sure, you can revive characters.
Yeah.
Why not?
Well, he did. Do you have any more carbs for me?
Why is it always food related?
Because it's too early in the day to ask you for alcohol.
All right, fine. You get some carbs, I'll go to the potty.
Time to take a break.
Time? Yes, let's take a break.
Hey, Pantheon listeners. Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shout It Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course. I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon. Pantheon. Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus Meal Plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
Let's step back into 1983. You ready, Major Tom?
I'm ready. Let's dance.
All right. Let's move on to number 7. We got Mad World by Tears for Fears. Mm-hmm. It's been a while since I heard the Tears for Fears song because I still had Gary Jules in my head because that's been played forever now because he kills it on that song.
What do you mean it's been playing forever?
I mean, Gary Jules cover has been, I think that was, you know, became a big hit in 2003.
Oh, yeah.
And so that.
So you're not.
But I remember. But yeah, but I forgot how good the Tears for Fears version is, and it is still extremely relevant, and or it's still a great great tune.
Yeah, for I think that this is my favorite song in the top 10.
Okay.
But this might be one of my favorite, might be my favorite Tears for Fears song, possibly.
Did you happen to watch the video at all? Did
No.
you review the video? Oh, okay. Kurt is kind of trapped in his own mad world. He's mm-hmm. pressed against the window and singing sad. You know,
oh, yeah. I do remember this. Yeah.
There's Roland doing this weird, like doing the mad world dance.
This never became a thing.
I know. It
didn't. I wonder why not.
I am shocked because now when I was watching it, going, oh, my God, if this came out now, this would be a phenomenon. I could see kids doing it on TikTok or whatever.
Oh, post that. Post that video.
Post the video of of the Mad World dance.
Yeah.
It's hilarious.
This is funny. So Roland Orzabal wrote this when he was 19. He wrote it on acoustic guitar. He says he wrote it after hearing Duran Duran's Girls on Film. And he said, I thought, I want to have a crack at something like that. And he ended up with Mad World. I don't see a connection between the two songs, but
it worked.
Good that Girls on Film inspired him.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great song. I do remember, I mean, because it was my, we'll mention Bowie again. was my first concert. But I remember, you know, they were playing different songs in between bands. And that song came on and. Now that I think about it, maybe the guy was doing
the dance.
The dance, because I remember some guy dancing to that song. Like, oh my God, that looks so cool!
Did you try it yourself?
No,
I'm going to video you secretly video you doing it, and I'm going to post it.
I know I'll have to. we'll have to attempt it. Maybe we will post it. Us trying to do the Mad World dance. And anyway, I mentioned the Gary Jules cover from Donnie Darko, and even though this not Christmas time, this was a Christmas number one song. Are you into the UK? I mean, you're kind of...
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's a big deal to be...
A Christmas song.
To have that Christmas number one song. You know, you saw Love Actually. Of course, you know how important it is.
We've talked about this, and it is funny. No, I can't relate to it, but I do know it's important. Weird, right?
It is weird. In last year, the number one song, shout out to all the UK people who are screaming what this song was.
What song?
It's some horrible song called I Love Sausage Rolls by Lad Baby. And it's to the tune of I Love Rock and Roll.
So it's a parody.
It is. It is. And obviously, the money went to charity. So it was all okay. Good. So it was good. I guess it's some one of these lifestyle bloggers put it together.
Okay.
And it's just goofy. But it's... but anyway, so I went down the Christmas number one rabbit hole, and I had to watch this I Love Sausage Rolls video.
And
well,
did you get a laugh?
I got a little bit of a laugh, but it's ridiculous. I can't believe that song actually made it to number one.
Yeah, those cheeky Brits.
This guy, his name is Mark Hoyle, who goes by Lad Baby.
So what,
any other Tears for Fears stuff?
Wait, just going back to the Donnie Darko reference.
Yeah.
Do you know that Richard Kelly, who directed the film, he originally wanted to end it with U2's MLK?
Oh, really?
Yeah, he couldn't afford the rights to it, though.
It's a problem.
Yeah.
That's, all movies. Yeah. If you ever make a movie, don't get attached to your songs.
Yeah, or a TV show. Yeah, no, I love Tears for Fears, in case that wasn't clear.
Good intro into the band Tears for Fears. We will be playing them more.
Yay!
As our podcast series continues.
Yeah, so stay with us, please. Yeah.
Okay, so number six, David Bowie's Let's Dance.
One in the UK, one in the US.
It's a good song.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah.
It's produced by Nile Rodgers. You can't go wrong.
Yeah, I know. You know,
you cannot go wrong.
It's amazing, like listening to on YouTube, you could hear demos of Let's Dance and just how
it came together,
how it all fell together. Because I think originally it was more of a folky song. I think Bowie thought, like, okay, I think I got something here, and then he gave it to Nile Rodgers, like, oh yeah, yeah. And so he funked it. He gave it, you know, like the chic sheen. It's interesting how that it all kind of comes together. This reintroduced Bowie to a new audience, including myself.
Yeah. It took me a while to pivot, for myself to pivot to this. But we discussed on the last on last week's episode who played guitar for David Bowie on this album.
Yeah, Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty
cool. That was introduced me to Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Yeah.
I had no idea who he was.
Yeah. No, this was it did take me a little while, but I got there with this.
Yeah, of course. Like a lot of things.
Yes. He said he tried to produce something that was warmer and more humanistic than anything I've done for a long time. Less emphasis on the nihilistic kind of statement.
Yeah. Although I will say that it ruined Bowie's subsequent albums. I think he tried to emulate the success of Let's Dance and didn't have as much success. I think Bowie has even said like the next two albums that followed Let's Dance were not his favorites.
Hmm.
But, you know.
I didn't.
But he came back.
Yeah. Well, and
always you
can always, yeah, and you can always go back to something of Bowie. You know, he's a perennial.
Yes, exactly. There's always, yes, you can always discover new and wonderful things about Bowie.
Have you heard the Smashing Pumpkins cover of the song?
No, thank you.
No, same. Agree.
Okay. So let's move on.
Yes.
Number five, Culture Club, Church of the Poison Mind. And this is Color by Numbers.
How much more can we say about Culture Club that hasn't been said?
Well, K-Rock can't say enough, or they can say enough. They've been, originally they had five songs of theirs on the charts, and now they trimmed it down to two. So out of the five songs from Culture Club, the only two that remained are Do You Really Want to Hurt Me and this Church of the Poison Mind. And for some reason, Church of the Poison Mind is in the top 10. Do You Really Want to Hurt Me was number 18. I think that could have been switched. I would have been happy with that.
Yeah, you're probably, well, I happen to like, again, this is just my opinion,
you have the microphone, you can talk.
Not the official standpoint of the What Difference Does It Make podcast. I like Church of the Poison Mind better.
Okay, you could like it. It reached number 2 in the UK. Yeah. It's kept out of the top spot by what song?
Kept out of the top spot by what song? I don't remember. Come on, it's been a whole week.
We talked about it 2 seconds ago. It's Let's Dance. Kept it out of the top spot.
Yes.
So this was the band's fourth top 10 hit in the U.S. and Canada. In America, it was still climbing the charts when Karma Chameleon was released as a single. And so, I mean, it's just, the hits just kept coming and coming. It's crazy.
The hits just keep on coming. Okay, so let me ask you this.
Yes.
So in an interview with Rolling Stone in 1984, Bob Dylan was asked if he belonged to any church. He joked that he adhered to the Church of the Poison Mind.
Sounds like a Dylan joke.
Was that a reference to?
Of course.
I figured. How could it not be?
By the way, shout out to Helen Terry, who really brings this song home.
Yeah.
She's the one doing the church vocals.
We love church vocals.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
The B-side of this song for Church of the Poison Mind is a song called Man Shake.
Did you listen to it?
I did, and it's horrible, but it.
but
I gave it a listen.
Okay,
it's hilarious. Man, it kind of has a beat of. It reminded me initially of Billy Squier's "The Stroke," which I think you probably want. Man Shake, "The Stroke." You know, it's all the same.
It's a theme.
Yeah, there seems to be a theme there.
Number 4.
So we'll end on with the Man Shake and the Stroke.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, number 4. Big Country in a Big Country.
Yeah.
Yay.
This is a great song. This is a great, fun, just like almost like anthem.
It was.
It was an anthem.
So this is the first time I had mentioned earlier that this was a band I really thought was going to be huge. I saw them at the Palladium back in 83. I don't think I've ever had this happen before at a concert. Big Country played in a Big Country early in their set. And then they encored with it, and they played it all over again.
Oh, I think I've seen that before. Not with them, but I've seen that with a band before.
The band will play, too.
And you're never sure. Wait, didn't they already play this?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay, sure, why not?
Yeah.
I mean, especially, you know, it's your debut album. You have 40 minutes. You have a 40-minute album, and then you got to fill up an hour's worth of time. So, you know, why not play that song twice?
Well, I'm sure the audience appreciated it because they were.
Yeah, at the time.
Yeah.
They were going to be huge.
Yeah. Do you know the songs that became hits in the UK from Big Country? Chance, Wonderland, and Look Away?
Wonderland, I remember. Yeah.
I didn't remember these songs.
There was that time, yeah. In 83, 84, they were huge. The first two, they had, what was the name of the first of the album? The Crossing?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so I had that, and then came, they had like an EP with Wonderland. It was like like four or five songs. And I got that. I remember having that.
Yeah,
because I didn't, because they were going to be huge. I was going to buy all their records.
You're a super fan.
They were so big. I mean, they were part of Band-Aid, you know.
Yeah.
They were in there.
Yeah, I can't help but get just a little bit sad at the end of Stuart Adamson's life.
Yes.
But yes, the music lives on.
But the music lives on.
Yeah. Yes. And hey, did you know Steve Lillywhite produced this one, this track?
That's probably why I love it, because he created some great music. Those anthemic themes. Mm-hmm. You could still catch Big Country. They're still touring, so different artists. By the way, I think Mike Peters of The Alarm has sung with the band.
He did.
Yeah.
He did sing with them, but he also chose this song to sing himself for a documentary series, The Song That Changed My Life. So it wasn't his documentary. This episode must have been about him. He was inspired by the song. And also, you know, because Mike Peters had leukemia.
Right.
So he said he was inspired by this song during his fight with
leukemia. In a big country?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Good to know. Let's move on to number three. Police, Every Breath You Take.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
From Synchronicity.
Creepy song, right?
It is a creepy song.
Stalking.
Hell yeah, it's a creepy song.
It's, yeah. There's a lot of creepy songs, but this is probably top five creepy songs.
Yeah. Does it freak you out that people play it at their weddings?
There's a lot of those.
I know.
Like REM, The One I Love is another one.
Yeah.
Where people think that that's a
love song. We talked about this. Yeah.
People don't listen to the lyrics. Or, just go to the chorus and, it sounds romantic. And you sing it that way.
I don't know. Yeah, I guess I don't always pay close attention to lyrics, but I knew this was a stalker song.
Yeah. There were some songs I remembered as creepy. Somebody's what Watching else? Me.
Yes.
Rockwell. there's James Blunt's You're Beautiful, where he sees a woman.
Yeah, but that's... I don't find that to be as stalky. No.
He doesn't talk to her. He's watching her like,
I'm never going to get you. I'm never going to have you.
Yeah. What else? Even I Want You to Want Me, the Cheap Trick.
That's stalky.
Yeah. I Want You to Want Me. I Need You to Need Me. I'd love you to love me. I'm begging you to beg me. Didn't I See You Crying?
I guess it could be. I never thought of that song that way.
Keep On Loving You. I Don't Want to Sleep. I Just Want to Keep On Loving You.
Okay. You're making me, I can't.
Here's another one that I didn't think. I looked at the lyrics and it was kind of creepy. The Bee Gees' Nights on Broadway. Here we are in the night full of strangers. I better not sing. Here we are.
Here we are.
In the night, in the room full of strangers, standing in the dark where your eyes couldn't see me. Well, I had to follow you, though you did not want me to. Well, that won't stop my loving you. I can't stay away. Get it on.
Oh, God. Okay. Yeah.
So anyway. So yeah, there's been other creepy songs. But yeah, that was when I was reading Nights on Broadway. Like, oh yeah, that's a good creepy song.
Very good. Good representation of creepy.
Yeah. Anyway, this is like a huge smash. This is the Police's biggest hit ever. What, right?
I would say so, yeah. And I think the chart says so too, probably.
I'm going to look at my Billboard charts. I'm going to look at the, I'm looking up the Police.
So I didn't remember this. Robert Downey Jr. recorded a duet of this song with Sting for an album from the show Ally McBeal. Because he was on Ally McBeal at the time.
Right.
The album was called For Once in My Life. And that was shortly before Robert Downey Jr. was arrested and sent back to rehab.
Nice.
Yeah.
And we never heard from him again.
Yeah. Yeah, really. Terrible guy. I love that guy. I know it is. My love for him is kind of creepy.
Apparently, the Police's three biggest hits are Every Breath You Take, King of Pain, and Every Little Thing You Do Is Magic. So okay. Yeah, so yeah, their biggest. It spent, as I look on here, 8 weeks at the top of the charts.
Wow,
that's 2 months at the top.
That's a long time.
That is a long time.
People really like their creepy.
Can't get enough creepy. Yeah.
Hey, you know that Stuart Copeland also says he didn't know the true meaning of the song either at first. It wasn't until it was after it was released. Do you believe that?
I believe that.
Yeah.
He's a drummer. He don't listen to the lyrics.
Well, good. It makes me feel less dorky.
Okay. Let's move on to, speaking of dorky, let's go to Men Without Hats and the Safety Dance.
Yes.
How do you spell that?
S-S-S-S. Well, it's only one S, really, but...
No, there's a lot of S's in...
This song, yeah. I did you like the song?
Yes. What's not to like about it? It's Men Without Hats.
You can dance if you want to. This song reminds me of my father-in-law.
Okay.
Who passed almost 7 years ago, sadly. But I don't know why. He liked, you know, some of the stuff from the 80s. And disco he also liked. But for some reason, I associate this song with him. So it happens, even though I don't love the song myself, it brings back happy memories because
of
my father-in-law. Yeah.
Very nice. Yeah, that's what music is.
That's what music does.
Yeah. They're Canadians.
Yeah, they're Canadians.
Men Without Hats. You know where that came from?
I do not.
It came because the brothers, following a self-described principle of style before comfort, refused to wear hats during Montreal's cold winters, calling themselves the Men Without Hats.
Well, that's very fitting then, right?
Yeah. You know, if you go, their official website is not menwithouthats.com. It's safetydance.com.
So are you more likely to remember the name of the song or the name of the band?
I don't know. But they're embracing their one-hit wonderness, although they had another hit in 87 that we might bring. Pop Goes the World. Do you remember that song?
Oh, I didn't.
Okay.
Huh.
Huh. I have to bring this up just because it's one of my daughter's favorite shows. Maddie's favorite show back when she was in middle school was Scrubs. This is how she knows the song, The Safety Dance. Married couple are talking, the woman is pregnant, and so the woman says, it's Carla and Turk. I don't know if you ever saw Scrubs.
No.
All right, well, Carla says, Turk, we're going to have kids soon. We're supposed to be a team. That means you occasionally have to listen to me and believe in my opinion. But what if we have a daughter and she wants to get her ears pierced? Then Turk says, irrelevant. We're not going to have a daughter. And then Carla says, okay, what if we have a son and he wants to take dance class, even though all his friends are playing football? And then Turk says, he can dance if he wants to. He can leave his friends behind. And then he starts saying, because his friends don't dance. And if they don't dance, then they're no friends of mine.
That's very good.
Yeah. So, and actually, the funny thing is, they cut back to Carla's at a bar with her friend, and she says, or relaying what happened with her conversation. And she says, and then I said, what if our son wants to take dance classes instead of play football with his friends? And Turk ran off singing Safety Dance. And then her friend says, Carla, didn't you learn your lesson that time you told him Der Kommissar was in town?
That's very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it has good memories for you, too.
It does.
You associate it with your daughter.
For sure. 100%. All right. So let's go. Here we go. Finally, up to number one.
And the number one song is Duran Duran's.
Is There Something I Should Know? Asking the musical question, is there something I should know?
Please, please tell me.
please tell me now. They recorded this song after Rio came out, but they didn't have an album. I think the label was like,
You gotta have an album.
You know, we have this debut album that didn't really sell well, and now all of a sudden Rio is selling like crazy. Why don't we re-release this album and just attach Is There Something I Should Know on it? And it worked.
I guess it did.
It went platinum. Mm-hmm. This debut album that was a flop suddenly became a major hit. So congratulations to the record label who came up with a good idea of selling something that initially didn't work.
Very creative, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, and actually, because of back in the day, vinyl records, you had a limit as to how much music you could put on a vinyl record. So they took off the song To the Shore instead and added, Is There Something I Should Know? And then it wasn't until the CD came out
You
got to hear all the songs.
Yeah. That was always so awesome and got you, except that you had to buy two platforms. had to buy two.
In the 80s?
Yeah. I mean, if you bought the vinyl and then you wanted the song that the super secret.
That's when the that's when record labels flourish because everyone's buying, rebuying their albums.
Yeah. It's like Star Wars, like the special edition, special, special edition, special, special, special edition.
Yeah. But they didn't even need a special edition. I mean, in 83, that's the compact disc was just starting to take off. So I think I got my first compact disc player in, it was probably 85, I think, was my first one.
Oh, I think ours was later. Yeah. Mine was later.
People were still buying albums and cassettes. And then a couple of years later, we start rebuying everything again. And the labels went nuts. Yep. And like, where are the money?
Yeah.
Yay.
Wait, can I just make a connection?
Please.
The guy who produced this song, Phil Thornalley, he produced The Cure's Pornography.
Oh, very
good. The Cure's album, Pornography. Right, not The Cure's Pornography. It always makes me happy to when a band has a Cure connection.
Okay.
That's all. And that is all.
And that is all. Yeah. Yeah, so it's good news. I mean, even though Andy Taylor's not in Duran Duran currently, they're still playing.
That's sad.
And they're still making music. Nick Rhodes said the band's been working on a new album since the start of 2019. He said there's one song so far that's a front runner to be the first single. It's just so different from anything I've heard from us before, or actually anyone else. There's a dance element to it, the construction of it, the melodic content, the lyrics, some of the sounds. They're very different for us. And he said late spring 2020 for the album looks realistic.
You're going to give new Duran Duran a shot?
Yeah, we'll give it a shot, sure. Nothing that any band back in the day records will replace or, you know, like move into the top 10.
But you just favorites. Have to know if you go in with an open mind.
Sure.
And if you like the music, you like the music.
You'll listen to it and go, okay, fine, great. I mean, I went to see Kiss. They played everything from the 70s and a couple songs from the 80s. They played a couple new songs like, oh, okay, this is fine.
They have new songs?
They have new songs, meaning from like, I think one from this millennium is what they play.
Oh, okay. So now they're not releasing new music now.
No, they're not.
They're not touring on a new album.
No, they're not pushing a new album or anything like that. But, you know, the music back in the day, that's the music that seems to live on. And I'm sure, you know, when I saw Paul McCartney, although he was playing, you tolerate the songs that that they play.
Sometimes they're good, actually.
Sometimes they're good. Mm-hmm. But when you're going to dig into Paul McCartney's catalog, do you pull up something from 2019 or do you pull up something from 1970? Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm amazed.
Right. Yeah. So I understand it's great. It keeps the bands relevant. You know, I don't know what I'm getting at really, but these songs live. It's cool to hear new music from bands that you love, but it'll never, in my mind,
it won't rival the old music.
Correct. The one, you know, when you first fell in love with the band.
Right.
Possibly someone who hears, you know, I actually with Springsteen, like there's a song Waiting on a Sunny Day that he plays like every show now. And a lot of people that discovered Springsteen, like that was their entry. They love that song.
Yeah.
I don't care for it much, but it is, you know, you're of that era. It's whatever era when you were. Like, that's why we do this podcast, I think. It's because we were 17. This is bullseye territory right here. This is perfect when we were open to new sounds and new excitement things.
Well, this is unarguably the best era for music.
Right. I always say that. And that's why we create a podcast around that. And I think that's probably why people listen to this, because they like to remember those songs.
The 80s.
All right, so there we go. So we're tying a bow around 1983.
Yeah, we're putting a lid on it.
I don't know. What do you do?
Yeah, we're tying a bow around it.
Tie a bow around it. Make it nice and pretty.
Chucking it into the backyard.
Okay, nice.
Bye-bye, 1983.
And as we do every episode, we quiz ourselves on different...
Well, one of us quizzes the other.
Okay.
This week...
We test ourselves, and hopefully... I'll be able to answer some of these things.
Yeah, because I am asking you.
Okay, it's my turn. We switch off every week. Last week I asked Holly. She got, I believe she got a B, a solid 8 out of 10.
Yeah.
And she got
she did.
A couple episodes back. She got 10 out of 10.
Thank you. Thank you for hyping me. I expect you, you know, we just expect this from you.
No.
Expect you to answer every question. So that's why we don't make a big deal of it.
Well, let's see what we got.
These also, I believe you're going to get 10 out of 10.
Okay.
I already only seeing a couple of them. Okay, who released the song Nobody Told Me in 1984?
Nobody Told Me There'd Be Days Like These?
Isn't John, that another, Julian, or George?
Is that another parentheses song? By John Lennon, by the way. But
it doesn't, it's not in parentheses.
Strange Days Indeed, wasn't that?
Yeah. I don't think it's parenthetical.
Okay.
You're looking at an actual book.
There's no parentheses.
Uh-huh.
It's just Nobody Told Me. Okay.
Okay.
Keep going.
All right. Which song by Wham has a chorus that begins with the phrase, I'm never going to dance again. Guilty feet have got no rhythm. Would you like the multiple choice?
It's got a great sax solo in it.
Yeah. Yes, it does.
It's the Careless Whisper.
Yes, it is.
Oh.
And on to another Wham song.
All right.
In which year did the group Wham release their most successful studio album, Make It Big?
Well, I'm thinking... We did not mention Wham at all in 83.
Oh, we didn't. You're right. We mentioned great artists.
So Faith, I'm thinking 85. Was that Make It Big? Or was Make It Big 81? I'm like, it's an odd. Like,
what do you want the choices?
Go ahead. What are the choices? I will not.
No. Kudos to you for trying to do it without the choices. 82, 84, 86.
I'm going to say 82 or 86.
84.
Oh, whoa. There we go. Okay.
Okay, you're 2 for 3.
That's fine. Okay, so next, our when we hit 84, we'll start talking about Wham.
I couldn't be any happier.
Keep going.
Yeah. Okay, in which year did the group Queen release the song Radio Gaga?
Oy, like 86? 87?
So you want the choices? 82, 84, 86.
Well, I said 86, but it might be 84.
Is that your final answer?
I will say 84.
You are correct.
All right.
You are 3 for 4. All right. I like these questions better. Which song by Tina Turner has a chorus that contains the phrase, who needs a heart when a heart can be broken?
Oh, what's love got to do with it?
Yes, but what song? Oh. Yes, no, you're correct. I was making a joke.
Suddenly I was like, wait, isn't that the title?
Yes. No, you're good. Are you 4 for 5?
Yes.
Yeah. In which year did Madonna release the song Material Girl?
Material Girl is probably 83. Well, 81. She came out in, the debut was 83. Wait, 82? 83. So, I'm sorry. Material Girl was from Like a Virgin, right? So that must have been 84.
Very good.
Okay, good.
Very good. Okay, here's another one. In which year did Madonna release the song Holiday? There you go. I think we just answered that question.
Okay, so there we go. So that was 83.
Very good.
Okay, good.
Who released the song Sexy Eyes in 1980?
Sexy Eyes? Was that Dr. Hook?
Yes, it was.
Okay, great.
Dave, you are 7 for 8. Okay.
Dr. Hook. Cover of the Rolling Stone.
Very good.
Uh-huh.
All right, the Michael Jackson song Bad was part of which album?
Well, that's self-titled. The titular track.
Trick question. Yes, that is the titular track of Thriller. Just kidding. Bad. Madonna released the song Material Girl in which year?
Didn't you ask that already? You asked Material Girl.
Holy crap. We're going to have to get with this author.
I know. Clint Glover. Boo.
Okay, wait. No.
Wait.
It's giving wrong options. We're going to have to find out. Okay,
a strongly worded letter is coming.
So we said 1984, right? Was when Material Girl was released. But the choices now are 83, 85, and 87.
All right. As I look in my book, Material Girl was 85.
I have 84. Oh, no, sorry. Like a Virgin was released in 84. So Material Girl was probably released in 85. Huh. Okay,
Like a Virgin hit number one. Material Girl was stuck at number two.
Okay, so I'm going to give you credit for both.
All right. Thanks.
So you have 9 out of 10. You have an A.
All right. Yay.
Dave, congratulations.
Thank you so very much. You're really good at this. All right. Well, that ties up 1983. Thanks so much for sticking with us for this whole year. This was fun.
Thank you. Yay, 1983.
Yes. Fun exercise. We will go on to 1984, but before we do that, we're going to have a number of episodes. We're going to
interview.
We've got a few people to talk to, and I think it should be fun.
And other topics to cover?
Yes, a lot of topics. We'll figure it out.
So stick with us. Thank you so much for listening.
Anything you want to hear, let us know. Like if a topic from the 80s that we're not covering or you'd like to have featured, let us know. You can reach out to us. Where can you reach out to us?
You can reach out to us. You can tweet us at WDDIM Podcast. You can find us on Instagram. You can check out our website. In fact, you should check out our website, WDDIMpodcast.com.
And sign up for our newsletter, which will be coming out in April.
Yep. And just, we'd like to know. And for those of you asking for an episode on hair bands, it's coming.
Excellent. I can't wait. That sounds exciting.
Can you really not wait?
I can't. I literally can't wait. All right. I will wait. I will literally wait.
Well, because I know, you know.
I'll stay here in the studio. Let me know when it's coming.
I'll be back.
Okay.
So thank you for listening.
Until next week. This is Dave.
This is Holly.
Check you later.
Over and out.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.